Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to a Need to Know podcast. This is episode 203. We're powering into the 200s on our way to 300. And my co-host is also here to help us achieve that. Welcome along, Brenton.
Good to be back, Robert.
203, eh? Look, we're getting into, we're approaching three figures now. This is this looks as though it could be a long-term enterprise. So we've still got a bit to go, but it's good to get feedback and hear from people that do enjoy the podcast. We had a little bit of that of late, so hopefully we are delivering the content that people want. So again, what we're going to do is bring you up with the cloud news as we always do, and then we'll probably go into a bit of a chat around the certification. So we'll see how we go, how much time we have. We might split that over a number of podcasts, so not to bore everybody, but again, it is quite a deep topic. So again, the way that we start off these things, as always, is to dive into a bit of news. And I think I'll kick it off today with some news from Azure that their data centers in South Africa are now up and available. So there are now two new Microsoft data centers in Africa. These are the first data centers from large organizations like Microsoft, Google, AWS on the African continent. And they're available now for use. And again, they are positioned in South Africa. So again, it shows you the continuing growth of the Microsoft cloud environment, and also the growth of the data centers right around the world. So Microsoft does have other data centers yet to come online in the UAE and also in Norway, I believe, from memory. So again, you know, lots and lots of servers in a big warehouse that everybody can store their photos from their camera on. So again, very interesting to see. We'll put the article, as we always do, up in the show notes so people can have a look at it. So Brenton, yeah, what's jumped out at you?
Just having a look at this Azure thing. It's got this nice map in the article that people should jump in and have a look at. And I'll show you where all the data centers are for Azure. So it looks like there's four in Australia. There's one in Singapore, three in India. That looks like about four in China, a couple in Japan. But there's only one in Brazil, and now there's going to be two in Africa. So, yeah, it's just sort of really nice looking map, really, to get your head around what's happening. So
just shows you where all the number of data centers are. So you think of, you know, the size of those, and that they're multiple. They're just the locations. There are multiple data centers in those locations with servers and racks. And so, again, if people think that companies don't buy computer hardware anymore, it's just basically only a few companies now buy server hardware, it would seem. So again, yeah, they are getting bigger, which is great, gives people the flexibility, and also good to see Microsoft taking the step and delivering it on the African continent. I think that'll be a real big step forward and hopefully drive some innovation and also some entrepreneurship in that region of the world.
Yeah, well, it's completely changed the world. I was listening to a podcast on how Squarespace was started, and the guy, you know, his whole thing was getting his 30 grand together so he could buy a couple of servers to put the web hosting on, you know, and now in this day and age, just go to Azure and spin it up, and you get, Microsoft gives you a heap of free credits if you're a developer to get you started. And it's like the barriers to entry that the cloud brings, particularly Azure in this space, is just insane. So bringing that into Africa would be really interesting to see what comes out of Africa as a result of that. Obviously,
well, apparently the big thing there is obviously they don't have the infrastructure, as in the cabling and the networks and that, but apparently the mobile is the big thing. So again, a lot of the development there will probably be for mobile devices, because the mobile device is king in places like India, South Africa, Africa, where they are developing markets. So again, they have the ability to potentially leapfrog the first world, because they can put in their 5G networks immediately and not be encumbered by existing, you know, agreements with telecommunications companies to run cables under the ground. So very interesting to see how that rolls out. But you're right that imagine if you're, again, someone coming out of school or someone who's interested in IT, now the opportunity to get right into Azure, to get trained, to start playing with this stuff is just phenomenal. It was so difficult. Obviously, back in the day, even in university days, you had to make time on the mainframe to do your projects or to do your assignments. Now, basically, you've got a PC in your pocket. So, again, big changes that we see out there. Now, the other thing that Azure brought us is something basically called Azure Sentinel. So Azure Sentinel is a new service. If you want to go and have a look at it, go into the Azure portal, search for the word Sentinel. You'll be able to see what it's all about. Basically, it's in preview, which means it is free at the moment. So in essence, what Sentinel is a roll-up of all the logging, the alerting from various services like Office 365 and other Microsoft, plus some third-party services, into dashboards for you. So you can basically create your own dashboards or use the ones that are there by default. And also as part of this Sentinel, I suppose, program is this Microsoft Threat Expert. So one of the big problems that we have is a lack of trained and skilled security experts to help us, you know, resolve the cyber threats that are out there. So again, Microsoft's bringing that, making that available to people. Again, we'll put the link in the show notes so you can go and have a look at it. But at the moment, I would suggest to you that if you're interested in doing advanced monitoring on services like Office 365, Azure, on-prem, that you have a look at Azure Sentinel. Again, it's free at the moment. It's under GA and before it goes GA, sorry. So go and have a look at it, have a play with it. So looking forward to seeing what that is. We expect that to continue to roll out, to link into more services, and probably an example of one of the reasons why I think Microsoft certainly is becoming the security company of choice now, simply because it can aggregate so many signals into a single dashboard and present them quickly and easily for you. So again, makes life much easier for those who need to monitor the crown jewels of a company.
Yeah, I think for the bigger companies, this is a really awesome technology. It's got some really nice pictures here about how it works. But when you think of what's happening in the back end, it's not that difficult for Microsoft to go into their own systems and grab that pieces of information. But for a third party to have to develop all of that, figure out how it all works, figure out the esoteric ways that every company does things, and try and make it all work on their side, and then things break and stuff. When you got Microsoft doing it directly in-house, I think you're going to find a lot of people moving over to this solution, because then they don't have to leave their tenant to go off to some third-party solution. And I remember Ann Johnson saying that, you know, their goal at the moment is to bring enterprises down from 120 security vendors down to about 60 or something, because it's all there in Microsoft. You know, not everything, obviously, but you can get most of it done. And they have the resources that most security companies would dream to have. So this is what's making them so competitive at the moment.
And also, I think the integration is the winner. So you've got Azure AD, which is generally your identity management, that can then be leveraged for signals, that can then be fed and, again, generate signals or retrieve signals from things like Office 365, on-prem as well. So it's all about signals now. It's all about taking all the data, running it through machine learning, artificial intelligence, and looking for anomalies, things that don't match up, patterns and behaviors that change, and then beginning to go in and examine those in greater detail. The volume of stuff that you have to go through means that only very large companies like Microsoft are going to be able to do this going forward. And again, lots and lots of signals from lots and lots of tenants makes it, again, something that Microsoft is able to do across its total environment and to help all the users benefit from the security monitoring it does across its total environment. So that is really impressive. And again, as I said, if you haven't looked at some of this stuff, go in and power up Azure Sentinel, connect it to some of your services like Office 365, your Azure AD logs, pull those in, start reporting on them, get an idea. It won't cost you anything while the service currently is in preview.
Another. Didn't you get pinged with Microsoft Cloud App Security this week, Robert? Didn't it send you an alert?
Yeah, so again, one of the must-have recommendations I would have for people who are doing Microsoft 365 or Office 365 is generally the add-on called cloud app security. So there are two versions of it, an Office 365 and a Microsoft cloud app security. So the Office 365 one's a couple of extra bucks a month. And basically what it does, it will take all the logging form from your services, put it into a nice portal for you, and allow you to create reports. So reports and alerts. So one of the things that is able to do, for example, is to alert you to things like impossible travel and also logging in from countries or regions that you don't visit regularly. So again, just came back from a trip to New Zealand where I was doing some Azure training, and of course the cloud app security obviously tripped off when I started logging in over there because it was the first time that I'd been over there. So again, know that it's doing its job. And again, I am getting the reports. And again, it's good to see that a simple product, a simple add-on like that can add real value when it comes to security in your environment. So again, one of the recommendations that I would certainly give anybody is to put in at least one SKU of cloud app security in their tenant to give them this improved reporting, improved analysis, and also improved alerting. So if you haven't looked at cloud app security, go out and have a look at that, I would recommend.
Excellent.
All right, so one of the other things just before we move off Azure is I noticed that LinkedIn is now talking about doing video streaming. So they're going to use Azure because obviously LinkedIn is a Microsoft owned company now. Not quite sure how it's going to pan out. I would not like to see LinkedIn become the video cavalcade that Facebook has become, but it's probably a good chance it's going to end up like that. But I think this is more aimed at doing live events. So if we did a webinar or if we did this podcast and you really wanted to see my ugly face and how gorgeous Brenton is, then we might be able to look at streaming it on LinkedIn, for example. So we'll just have to wait and see what comes down the pipeline with that. But again, keep your eye out if you're a LinkedIn customer for the LinkedIn video streaming service that, again, seems to be announced just recently. All right, Brenton, what else have you got in your bag of tricks there that you've been looking through in the cloud?
What else is happening? Robert's found this nice little GUI for connecting into PowerShell. So for those who use PowerShell a lot, which is quickly becoming me, given the amount of things that you can do with PowerShell that you can't do consistently otherwise. Robert's really got me onto this bandwagon of PowerShelling everything. You can use this nice little window to choose what services you want to connect into. You just run the code in PowerShell, it pops up. You can use 2FA quite easily, which it's a different process for running 2FA on Office 365 tenants. So if you're stuck doing it the old way and haven't learned how to upgrade to the new way, this is a really cool way of just connecting. So Robert posted that up. I downloaded it, had a go with it. Works pretty well. What was your experience with it, Robert?
Well, I think the thing is, it's if you're not spending, you don't want to spend a huge amount of time in PowerShell, one of the most confusing things I think initially is getting up, firstly getting the environment ready for PowerShell, then also connecting to services like Exchange Online, SharePoint, and so on, because they typically require their own connection. You have to obviously log into each service before you can start manipulating it with PowerShell, which is a bit painful. And again, doing that through a command line interface, if you again haven't got those scripts or the shortcuts set up for you, can be a bit painful. Then this GUI makes it nice and easy. You just click things that you want and off you go. Now, I think it's really good for those who are a casual PowerShell user or need to, aren't using it every day. But on the other side, I think it will also lack some flexibility. So I like using PowerShell directly myself, writing the scripts and actually doing the code so I can see what works. I can see any errors. Nothing gets in the way. So if there are issues or I want to keep developing and I can. But again, it's an option out there that people can use. It's a good stepping stone, I think, into doing the full side of PowerShell. It will take away, again, some of that fear, I think, of getting started in that environment, actually start using it. But I would suggest that, again, it's an intermediate step to really what you should be aiming at is becoming comfortable with the command interface itself directly and, basically writing and running your own scripts. So I think it's a good handy tool to get you started, but again, you need to look at it as a stepping stone, I think, to becoming much more conversant in PowerShell.
Probably one of the things I will mention, though, it's got this prerequisite checker. So you run this code, you can click on the prerequisite checker, and it will check if you got the right modules installed. Because as Robert said before, you can't just open PowerShell and start doing stuff. You can, but you can't do everything. You actually need to download the modules and make sure your PowerShell is right. So it will go through and check all the prerequisites and help you through that process. So again, if you're not a PowerShell expert like Robert, and you're just getting started with it, this might be a good little tool to just help you get over that first initial barrier of using it.
I'll also make sure that I put the link to my GitHub repository, which has a lot of the scripts that I make available for free. So Office 365, Azure, and so on. So those scripts are available for anybody to use. One of the scripts that I've put up there is the script that will go through the mailboxes and check if there are any forward setup. So hopefully that'll warn you if there has been a compromise and one of the users have been phished. So again, we'll make sure the links are in there so you can go and go out there and play with that. Now, one of the other things Microsoft has given us in the last little bit here has been a update on its security intelligence report. So this is obviously Microsoft reporting on what it sees out there in the space, you know, what sort of attacks it's seeing, what sort of compromises, what sort of ways that you can better protect yourself. So again, it's just a downloadable PDF that I recommend that you go out and have a look at. Again, we'll put the link in the show notes for you so you can go down and have a look at that yourself. And obviously there are some updates around OneDrive for Business as well. So again, OneDrive improvements continue again to march on, especially for the mobile apps. So make sure that you're always updating those apps basically on your mobile devices because they are improving month by month by month. What else have you got there, Brenton? Anything else jump out at you?
One last thing just around Microsoft Teams. So we can see here that Microsoft Teams has surpassed Slack in user count. They're talking it might be up around the 40 million user range now. So for a product that's, what, not even 2 years old now, might be 2 years old, I can't remember when it had its birthday, it's now got 40 million users. They're talking about Facebook Workplace here is sitting there with about 2 million paid users. But they see it more as a competition between Workplace and Yammer. They have a different sort of value proposition. But yeah, very, very interesting to see this rapid rise. It wasn't a surprise to me by any far stretch of the imagination as I saw Teams and how it worked and how similar it was to Slack and how it all integrated into everything and how everyone was going to get it by default. I thought, oh, well, poor old Slack, it's going to be a niche product at the end of this. But yeah, so we'll put the article up there. Did you have any thoughts around that, Robert?
Yeah, look, I think that they're both tools. They both do a job. I think if you're in the Microsoft environment, it makes a lot of sense to use the Teams side of it because it links into SharePoint. It links into the other Office 365, Microsoft 365 environment. I don't necessarily see it as a direct Slack competitor. I think Slack tends to be a standalone tool generally. Again, it was early into the market. Microsoft is following along in this idea of collaboration space rather than using emails. So I think it was a really good add-in is what was required for Microsoft to fill some of these collaboration roles. I think the main thing is to understand how the tool can be used effectively in a business. So I've seen both tools used very effectively, and I've seen both tools used very poorly. So again, this is a different concept as to when it comes to communications. Again, too much of this style can also be very distracting, but again, used correctly, it is a very, very effective tool, and we use it in the patron group that we're at so people can get familiar with it. So we have, for example, a team for the patrons, and inside that team, for example, is a scripts channel, and people can, for example, go in there and make suggestions or update or suggest improvements to the PowerShell scripts that are available to the patron community. So again, I think that both fulfill a role. I would suggest that, again, if you're more into the Microsoft ecosystem, the Teams makes a lot more sense. But again, there are certainly a lot of Slack installations out there. But to me, the Teams integration and also, again, its ability to work across all the platforms in the Microsoft space, I think makes it the winner.
Oh, yeah. It's very hard to really build a use case for Slack. It has a couple of features, but as far as feature parity goes, Microsoft has closed the gap significantly since they first ran with the product. And for 99% of users, it's fine. You know, it works well, and it does everything that they would normally do in Slack. And, you know, it's got some other benefits that Slack doesn't as well. We talk a lot about the security, but yeah, security and audit and single sign-on is pretty easy because they already sign into Microsoft Office 365. So it's a single sign-on, whereas, you know, that's a project to make all that happen in Slack. So yeah, it'd be very, very difficult in this day and age to make a compelling case around why Slack over Teams, even if you don't have an Office 365 account. It's just it's just a rock solid product.
Well, I also think too the biggest challenge is again people moving from traditional files and folders into this new collaboration style environment. So that's probably the biggest challenge, no matter what the product uses. And again, like I said, if you're in the Microsoft space already using the Microsoft technologies, it's going to be a bit easier, I think, because of the integration factors that are available with Teams. So again, interesting to see that how quickly that it has caught up to the product. Again, if you were Slack, you'd sort of be a bit worried that you're sort of a single product company and you've got Microsoft with obviously large financial backing and multiple packages that is, makes it a compelling offer. So again, something to keep in mind down the track, and we'll see what happens as this pans out going forward. All right, well, I don't think I've got anything else that's burning on the news side to cover. Anything else that we haven't covered that you'd like to mention, Brenton?
Oh, I think we've done a pretty good job of covering what's happened in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
So, yeah, there's been a lot happening. And again, Microsoft, again, is ramping up, obviously, in the new year. It's moving, obviously. I think the next conference is its Build conference, which I think is in early May for developers. And then, obviously, it's going to go into its Inspire, which is its partner one, in the middle of the year. And then we'll get Ignite again in September. So, again, we expect to see lots and lots of good information coming out of that. There was a new HoloLens that was announced, interesting little sort of camera for IoT as well that I saw come out. So, again, the innovations just keep coming, which is good to see. A bit distracting at times, but certainly good to see that we're getting these sort of integrations. So for our remaining time, I think we might spend a little bit talking about the certifications that Microsoft now has available. So the idea is that for generally every technology Microsoft has, servers, desktops, cloud technologies, there is a certification that you can obtain in each of those areas. So you can do an exam or a number of exams, and you can then be certified in Excel, you can be certified in Windows, Windows Server, Office 365, Microsoft 365, and so on. Now, traditionally, those exams have been rather broad because as we move into the cloud, services like Microsoft 365 and Office 365 are quite broad, covering, say, Exchange, SharePoint, Skype, you know, Stream, all this sort of stuff. But the new exams that they have released, again, are far more focused. So, for example, in the world of Azure, there used to be very broad exams around infrastructure, and now they've broken it down to what they call sort of like functional. So you have an administrator exam, you have a developer exam, you have an architect exam, and you also have sort of a hybrid exam. So again, these give you, I think, a lot of benefit in two major ways. Firstly, they give you credibility when you're talking to others on these technologies. There are so many cloud gurus or so many people who claim to be cloud gurus out there who are probably not doing as good a job as they could. I think the certification, again, makes sure, gives some certainty to the customers or the prospects that you work with that you do, you have studied the Microsoft technologies. And I think the other thing from a personal point of view, A, is it keeps you moving forward and in your own professional development. And I think the other big thing is it gives you a much broader understanding, appreciation of what the product entails. So for people who spend most of their life in the SMB, doing a certification exam can open your eyes to things like Azure AD Premium One, the Microsoft Cloud App Security. So all of these additional things that you may not have experience with, the certification exam will give you that experience and then potentially open up additional opportunities for you as well. So personally, I think there's going to be greater demand for certified IT pros going forward. And I think the approach that Microsoft's now taken with his exams is going to make that, again, something that's going to be pretty much the standard, I think, going forward for those who are serious about installing, supporting, managing and maintaining products like Microsoft 365. What do you think, Breton?
Yeah, I think what you've said there is all pretty correct. You know, as the products developed and matured, Microsoft has had to make changes to how it certifies people. You know, I was sitting there talking to you guys, Mark O'Shea, Mark Keane, and I say Mark O'Shea, who is an expert in Azure AD. Someone comes up to him and says, "Are you an expert in Azure AD?" And he goes, "What part of Azure AD?" You know, and I think that really sums up what's happening in this ecosystem, that, you know, as the product gets more and more complex and it gets more features and more use cases and all of this sort of stuff, it requires people to know more. And the only way you can really be sure that the person you're talking to actually knows what they're talking about is if they've gone and done some sort of certification around that. But if they say, "Well, I'm certified in Azure," well, you know, what does that even mean? You've got 100 or 150 different products in there, blockchain, you know, Azure AD, Intune, all of this stuff that's in the Azure portal. All of that is a completely different, you know, every one of those is kind of a different skill set, the sort of stuff that Troy Hunt's doing, and, you know, completely different to the traditional development. So I think it's really interesting. I was having a look through your certifications, Robert. So Robert makes his resume available on the Patreon group. So if you're in there and you're searching around for stuff, you might chance across it. And in here, it said all these certifications. So do you mind if I go through them, Robert?
Yeah, go for it. That's a problem. No problem.
All right, so Microsoft Certified Office 365 Administrator, Certified Azure Administrator Associate, Certified Azure Solutions Architecture Expert, which I think is the highest qualification, Microsoft Certified Professional, Microsoft Certified Trainer, Ops Agility Certified Trainer, Microsoft Azure Expert, and MVP, obviously, in Office 365. So that's quite a bit of that's quite a few qualifications. Which of those qualifications do you think was most valuable for you getting your head around the modern cloud? You know, you've been doing this for a long time, so you're already pretty across it. But, you know, what was the best certification in your experience?
Well, I don't think there's necessarily a best certification. I think they all have their benefits. I think that if you're going to do the Microsoft Cloud, then it makes sense to do Microsoft 365 and Azure exams together. Most people are probably going to want to start with Microsoft 365 because that's what they're using every day. That's what they're familiar with. That's what they're working with. But on the other side, I would certainly encourage people to look at stretching themselves to learning new skills and doing something like Azure. So if you don't spend a lot of time doing Azure and you want the opportunity in that space, then that's something, again, you can do under your own steam and, again, may require a bit of extra work, but it's certainly worthwhile because it will give you a much better grounding in the product. Now, for day-to-day stuff, again, Microsoft 365, hopefully most people are familiar with, you know, things like creating users, changing passwords, setting up things like Azure AD Connect, doing synchronized identities. So again, doing an exam like that hopefully should be a bit easier for people, a bit more familiar because they have already worked with that sort of technology on a regular basis. But beware, it's going to test the full range. So it's not going to just test Office 365 Business Premium, it's going to test basically all the way up to Microsoft 365 E5. So that means learning some technologies like ATP and whatnot that you may not be exactly familiar with. So if today you were an IT pro out there who's working with Microsoft Cloud and again wants to improve your knowledge and stand out from the crowd, I would certainly be starting at the basics of the Microsoft 365 exams, which are the MS-100 and the MS-101. So the MS-100 is typically more administrating the services. The 101 is typically more about administrating the devices. So certainly do the 100 before the 101. In the Azure, same sort of deal. I'd start with the 100, and there's also a 101, and then work from there. Now, the other one that I would call people's attention to, I think there's a big opportunity, is the MS-500. Now, the MS-500 is actually a Microsoft 365 security exam. So that focuses on things like DLP, advanced threat protection, spam filtering, all that sort of stuff. So I think if it was me, I'd be certainly doing the basics. I think they should be fairly easy for most people to get through because they're using that every day. And then I'd look at doing something like the Azure certs, or otherwise look at the MS-500, the security one in Microsoft 365. There's also a collaboration one there if you want. Now, the other thing I will note is that there is actually what they call 900 exams. So MS 900 is what they call an introductory certification. So again, it's much broader. It's not as technical. It's a good stepping stone, and it's obviously cheaper to take. And that is something that if you've never taken a Microsoft exam or never done this sort of thing but want to start ramping up, I would again look at the 900 exams, both in Azure and Microsoft 365, as a good stepping stone. Failing that, look at, like I said, the 100 exams in Microsoft 365 and Azure. And one of the ones I will call out beyond that would be the MS-500, which is the security exam for Microsoft 365.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm just having a look at the MS-900 now. You know, the sort of curriculum you have here, understanding cloud concept, understanding core Microsoft 365 services and concepts, understanding security, compliance, trust. So it doesn't look overly technical. So if you, you know, understanding licensing options available in Microsoft 365, I think we can all get better at that. You know, there was recent changes again to Azure, what was it, Advanced Threat Protection. Was it Office 365?
Yep. Advanced Threat Protection. They added another license, so there's now ATP Plan 2. There's Plan 1 and a Plan 2 now, so again, that's now expanded.
Yep. So it's just being abreast of all of that. You know, there's one thing to listen to the podcast and get on top of it, but there's another thing to actually sit down, do a structured, you know, approach to it all. And, you know, there's not many companies that really do this well and really give you the skills. There's a lot of tech companies that offer a lot of technical certifications, but yeah, it doesn't get quite much better than Microsoft certifications. In a lot of ways, because every customer uses it, right? So they can't get away from it. So
what we've seen out there is a lot of hesitancy from IT pros that would say, look, I don't need certifications. I've never been asked for certifications. I, you know, use my experience to obviously generate my own income. Yep, I 100% agree. That's great. We all know people who are certified up the razoo, but basically can't connect two pieces of paper together using a stapler. So the idea here is I would suggest certifications are more about your own personal development. Firstly, making sure that you do understand and you do know the stuff that you are working with. You're not missing something obvious that may allow you to do it better, cheaper and quicker as well. And also to increase the breadth of your knowledge across the product. So most people generally work with a very small, select range of products and services. But doing a certification exam is going to test the full boundary. And I think, again, if you look at it as a benefit, a personal development, a professional development thing to add value to you, then I think it's certainly worthwhile as a professional discipline. So, again, people who are afraid of doing certifications are generally afraid of having their knowledge tested, which would indicate that they're probably not as confident as they should be. And again, yes, it's going to require work. It's going to require study. There's no question about that. But again, it is something that in this environment you're going to need to continually do to keep up to date with the technologies and make sure that you are current. And when you do get a certification, it's going to give you that differentiation point from so many people out there who, again, aren't certified. And unfortunately, in the rounds out there, I find a lot of very, very poorly implemented Office 365 and Microsoft 365. This has never this has always been the same, even back to, you know, Small Business Server. There were people who did it well and people who didn't do it properly at all. And unfortunately, the customer suffered. So again, I would suggest that certifications are going to help you do it better, give your customers a better result, help you stand out from the crowd. And therefore, they're worthwhile doing for you to improve yourself and your opportunity, rather than something you can hang on the wall and potentially go and Skype to people when you're at your next technical meeting.
Yeah, I think that's good advice there, Robert. I've got a couple of questions about mechanics of it though. So first one is really around, how do you study for the exams? What happens when you take the exams? You know, is that you sit in a big empty room with no one else around? How's the exams formatted? And, you know, how do you know if you're successful and all of that? How do you know what you did well and what you didn't do well? And maybe if you could take us through the life cycle of taking a certification.
So generally what you do is, obviously, the first step is to determine which certification exam you want to sit for. So let's say we want to sit for the MS-100, which is the first Microsoft 365 exam. You would go out and you would see what the requirements are for that exam, what's actually going to be tested. So the important thing to remember is when you sit a certification exam, you don't want to be studying or worrying about stuff which isn't going to be asked. So for example, in the MS-100, you're not going to be necessarily asked about things like Stream, things like Yammer. Again, it's more about administrating the services, users, passwords, logins, synchronizing identities, deploying Office, that sort of thing. So again, you'll find a website that Microsoft provides that lists out all the topics that will be covered. Make sure that you basically break those up. So the way, what I do is I basically take that list, copy it into OneNote, and then I start building the links for each of those topics around that I find on the internet. So building in a study process. Now, when you feel that you're ready to take the exam, basically you'll go back to the website, you would follow the bouncing ball and say that you're ready to do the exam. The exam process allows you to do it in two ways. You can either go to an examination company that will do it for you. So again, an examination center. Typically, these are in large training organizations in most capital cities or large cities. The other way you can do it, if you can't do that or that's not convenient, is you can do what's called a proctored exam. So basically, that means locking yourself in a room with no windows that's private, and using a webcam, Microsoft will monitor you remotely to make sure that you aren't doing anything that would allow you to cheat in the exam. So there are two options here. Go to an exam center or do a proctored exam. The proctored exam, again, needs to be done in an environment that is secure and won't allow you to cheat. And then, obviously, the other one is examination center. And typically, an examination center, you'll rock up at the designated time. You will provide some identity papers, driver's license, credit card. They will then take you into a room, sit you in front of a computer, and then basically the exam will start. Now, the exam is run in a secure browser, which means you can't drop out to the operating system or run the system command or get your GitHub repository with all your PowerShell scripts to solve your problems. And then you'll be given a range of questions, and typically there's about 60 to 70 odd questions, I think, right, generally, depending on the exam, and they come in a range of different formats. So the exams could be multiple choice. They could be yes, no. They could be drag and drop. So complete this PowerShell command by dragging and dropping. There'll also be scenario ones. So they'll give you a scenario, company this has this and this, solve this problem, solve that problem. One of the newest exam questions they are bringing basically is what they call performance-based testing. And the idea here is they will give you a virtual machine and say, you need to complete these six tasks. So you need to create three users, assign them to a group, add them a license to them, and click this button when you're finished. So again, you can do that with PowerShell, you can do it through the web interface, as long as you get the job done. So again, you get a range of questions, a range of approaches, but generally the exam is going to, you should allow, you know, 2 to 3 hours, generally about 60 questions to work through. When you've done all those and you finish the last question, you can then basically, the exam will be scored and you'll be given your result. If you pass, then again, you don't need to do that exam. If you fail, you generally, you can redo the exam if you need to, and you'll get a printout showing you the status. So, and that's a very basic walkthrough of sort of the life cycle, as Brendan says.
Yeah, so it's a closed book exam, so you actually have to know the stuff. You can't just sit there and Google it while you get in there. Is that correct?
Yeah, you would use, I'm sure Google wouldn't be available in a Microsoft exam. It would only be Bing if it was allowed, but there are no search engines allowed.
Only Microsoft search if you
yeah, that's right.
If it's part of the certification, yeah, in the VM.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, no, that's a really good overview, Robert. I think most people are intimidated by things. They don't know how it all works and what it does. And I certainly didn't have that level of depth of knowledge because I haven't done one before. So that was a really good walkthrough of what those exams are. Now, before we cut it off today, because we're running pretty late, what's your number one piece of advice for someone who wants to get a certification, maybe hasn't, and would like to?
Well, I think at the end of the day, you take the lowest hanging fruit, especially if you haven't done it before. Use something that you're already familiar with. To most people, the most logical exam is going to be the Microsoft 365 MS-100 exam. This is an administrative exam around things you're probably doing day-to-day for your customers. So it's going to be around like creating users, changing passwords, setting up Office on desktops, doing all that sort of stuff, which you're probably pretty much doing every day, day to day. Now, the only caveat to that is going to be around things like, remember that you're going to be tested on the full suite of the Microsoft services, so all the way up to E5. So again, this is going to mean testing on things like Azure AD P1, two-way password synchronization, stuff you may not have seen. The concepts are there, the documentation is there that you can work through, but at the end of the day, remember that it's going to test that full range all the way up to the enterprise level of the exams. But if it was me and I was starting out, again, if you're really wanting somewhere to start, and again, you want to do the first baby step, I suppose, or the first very initial step, look at doing the 900 exam, which, as Brendan indicated, is very general in its approach, give you some confidence, give you a feel for it. It's not a prerequisite for any of the other exams. So again, you can do that without needing to have that before you do, say, the 100s or the 500s or the 900s exams. But if it was me, I'd be starting at the MS-100. And again, you'll see that the commonality here is like managing domains, implementing Microsoft 365 services, managing the tenancy, managing the subscription, planning migration, managing the AD identities, managing doing things like MFA, multi-factor authentication, and then obviously bringing workloads, Office 365 desktop workloads. So hopefully most people are doing those sort of things already. That's the low-hanging fruit. That should mean less study because you are using that day to day. And then from there, it's a matter of probably deciding what makes sense. Again, if you wanted to go down the Microsoft 365 track deeper, then I'd look at the MS-101 after that, which is more around device management than services administration. But I think most people should be able to spend probably around, if they can allocate themselves a 30-day training window. So again, a 30-day study window, do the exam basically after doing a bit of study for a month or so. I'd be pretty confident that you should be able to pass the exam if you're using Microsoft 365 today.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Robert. That was a great interview. I was very interested to hear what you had to say, having been a veteran of the Microsoft certifications for a long time.
So I would suggest that what we need to do, Brenton, is we need to get people to encourage you to connect with us to basically send us some feedback and maybe nominate what exam you should do. And then we can all follow your progress as we as you go through that process. What do you say?
Oh, that'd be great. People will send through Azure Expert, you know, blockchain, something or other, and they'll be like, what? Sure. no, I reckon I could probably handle Microsoft 100, so maybe the 900, something like that. It's probably within my skill set. You know, my ideas are far more conceptual than hard technical. I don't do a lot of hard technical stuff, do very basic
hard technical stuff. But I would think even the security one might be one worth considering as well, to brand yourself as a, you know, a certified security person.
Oh, I could do that. I suppose that. The challenge is, when you're working across a lot of customers, you really need a lot of customers in order to make, like a lot of users in order to make those solutions really work properly and have the resources to roll them out to a customer. So it's great to have an idea. You know, some stuff like ATP, no brainer, you turn it on. But when we get into Azure Information Protection and classifying data and, you know, automatic classification of data and those sorts of things, I think that's a little bit more of a stretch and not something that applies to every organization. But for those who do need it, I think it's a godsend of a thing. But maybe I'd just get someone, an expert in those technologies in if I ever got a job like that.
Sounds to me as though that might be IT pro, standard IT pro excuses, eh? You just don't want to do an exam, eh? Is that what it is?
No, I don't want to be an IT pro. I quite like being the bridge between the technical and the business. People come to me with problems. I know what the answers are. And then I get people who are gurus to make it all happen in a way that...
So maybe the 900 exam is something you can aim at.
Yeah, I reckon I could do the 900. It's just a matter of blocking out the time, like you said, block out that month, do the study, make sure I'm across it. You know, I'm pretty across most of the stuff, but I think some of the on-prem stuff, because I'm a born in the cloud, started in G Suite, and moved over to Office 365 once it got better than G Suite. And I don't have an on-premises background. So that's usually the big barrier for me whenever I have to go look at a server or something. I go, that's not for me. But, the cloud stuff comes pretty naturally. But the concepts are the same, you know, at the end of the day. We're all trying to help people get their work done.
All right. So what I would suggest for our listeners out there is that if you want to encourage Brenton to go and do at least one Microsoft exam so that he can experience that for himself, you can contact us via at N2K Podcast on Twitter and also on Facebook. You can send us an email, feedback@needtoknow.cloud. You can find me at Director CIA. And again, the encouragement you can send to Brenton on the Twitters is at @ContactBrenton. And again, we'd love to hear what people think about the certifications, whether you've taken any, what your experience is, again, what you would like us to talk about in more depth, because again, lots of exams there, lots of tips, tricks, I suppose, best practices we can provide. At the end of the day, you certainly have to do the exam yourself, but it certainly can be handy to get some guidance and some best practices when it does come to doing the exams. But the core of it is look at it as a way to improve your own skill set, your own professional development. And I think we're going to see more of these exams coming out for Microsoft 365 and Azure, which means you can become very specific and make sure that you do know the stuff that you say in quite in detail. So I think that's worthwhile doing. But by all means, we encourage you to send us any feedback that you may have. We'll make sure the links are up on the podcast episode when I get round to putting it up and on the blog. With that, is there anything else you'd like us to cover before we end this episode, Britton?
No, don't do drugs, kids, and continue rolling out that Office 365 goodness.
Yes, I think it's more like don't do spam or malware, kids, but fair enough, that's my message. So again, thanks everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.